woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the...
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 36, NASDAQ futures down 188. A lot of this has become a couple of earnings last night that hit like a stink bomb in church. One was the Meta, which is down $71 now. That's 14%. And IBM, which we unfortunately did a tiny little spread in. Wow, down $16. Caterpillar down $13.50. So IBM blew through two times the straddle, which is something. And Meta's down, the straddle in Meta was $45, and stocks moved $70. So let's just say the market did not predict the size of this move. Now the guy who always predicts things perfectly is Lou Michaels. Lou, how are you?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Doing Sorry good. How
was last week?
Wasn't the same without our Lou fix. So the topics have piled up here for you.
You had a pleasant Thursday morning conversation.
You know, a couple of people here had the exact same thing, where they were sort of okay, just no voice.
Yeah, it hit my wife, and then I sent the email to you like 2 days before, but I could just feel my voice just sort of disappearing. So, just as well nobody had to suffer through that.
What good exactly is an attorney without a voice?
Well, you can still write, so that...
Yeah, but nobody reads anymore, Lou.
We do.
Oh, lawyers still do it. There you go.
We do lots. You can still write. You can still look at documents and build time. So that's what I tried to do.
It's not the billing, it's the collecting, bud.
Right.
Where do you want to start? We got Columbia University. We got non-compete clauses.
Let's start with this non-compete issue, because we have talked about non-competes on the show way, way back. And this is an area that is what's happening right now with the Biden government, the Biden regime. Is my perception is that they are rushing to do stuff that nobody in their right mind thinks they have the power to do, but they're putting it out there because he's in a lot of trouble electorally, and they are desperate to try to keep...
Lou, you got to kick your volume up a hair and move to a different spot.
Come on.
What do we do, Greg? To kick him? Well, yeah, for those that... don't get the haven't seen this.
Let's try this.
There you go.
Any better?
Yeah, a lot better.
Okay. I don't know what's going on. I'm sitting at a computer. So anyway, we talked about non-competes a while back, and what's happening right now is that the Biden people are looking to try to leverage any possible thing they can for an electoral advantage, because their guy is not going to be able to debate. I don't know if you saw the episode yesterday where he was speaking at some event, and he said, that he was reading off the teleprompter, and he goes, "So, 4 more years, pause," because he read the script directions off the teleprompter.
Oh God!
And, you know, I mean, he's done it before, but it's really noticeable here. And they can't, there's not enough, there's no drug cocktail, apparently, that's going to be able to prop him up.
I really wanted to get into this. I've been reading stuff from some of the other side. People sent me some stuff that if you take a look at Trump's rallies for the last year, and he's degrading just as bad.
He's not as degrading as fast, but he's degrading. Yes, I agree. But I think he could get through a debate. I don't think Joe.
Well, I mean, can he get through a debate where he's supposed to know something, or he just insults?
Well, you know, I'm not sure it makes any difference. Well,
not for this. Not for the citizenry we have now. It's entertainment. No, it's not.
Anyway,
yeah.
So the Biden people kick out, the FTC just comes out of the blue with this non-compete ban. So non-competes are agreements that you sign typically as part of an employment agreement when you're hired, that restrict your ability to go into a similar or the same type of business for whom you're now working for a set period of time. And usually in a set geographic area, unless you're working for a large international company. They are they're subject to a lot of different issues, but they are a state-by-state issue. Each state treats non-competes differently and by whatever context the state government happens to run. There are good reasons for non-competes, but like any other employment tool, they can be misused, and they have been. So there are two issues on this. The first is, what the heck is the FTC doing by executive fiat, essentially outlawing contracts that are in use in tens of thousands of positions throughout the United States, and that are, you know, are suddenly being struck by an executive agency with no debate in Congress.
Well, Lou, by Congress. Sort of a off topic, I'll be 30 seconds with this or left. Department of Labor just came out with a fiduciary responsibility for anybody who manages money for people in a retirement account. They have no idea what a fiduciary relationship even is.
Well,
and yet, that's an SEC. That's an SEC problem.
This is much worse, because that at least arguably is within their purview.
How does a security account become the Department of Labor's purview?
Well, because the Department of Labor runs ERISA and tracks that, and so these issues at least fall within that executive supervision area. That authority has been ceded to the Department of Labor by Congress. Nobody ceded this authority to the Federal Trade Commission.
Okay, let me drop back to what's happening, just to bring the listeners up to how does this actually work? Well, for some people, I mean, obviously, you know, the 50-state thing. In my area here, we're down to however many firms, you know, actually make markets on the options floor. Or stock floor, which is absurdly less than it was, you know, years ago when I was a trader on the floor. So let's say we're down to 10, 15 firms, three or four of which dominate. Virtually, if you get a job as a janitor there, there's going to be a non-compete of some kind.
Well, and that's an abuse, Tom.
Well, I'm saying, you know, but you're into such a closed industry that no matter what you do. That now, whether or not it's quote enforceable, and I don't want to take a shot against the attorneys of the world, because, you know, I love them. There's no way on earth. I know a guy who's he's a back office guy. He's a risk guy. Okay, those guys just go by numbers. The clearing firm. Well, his non-compete is a year.
Well, okay.
And some firms are letting people sit out for the year, but there's no way on earth that. I mean, the question is it enforceable? This guy. You know, he's got a few bucks. There's no way he hires an attorney for $600 an hour and fights this, given what the courts are like, because that'll take a year and a half.
So that's a separate issue. But let's talk about the use of non-competes for people who really shouldn't have them. So the thing you try to the things they're and this is where the FTC's off the rails. You know, they say, well, you know, trade secret and intellectual property protections can adequately secure an employer's intellectual property and knowledge so that you don't need a non-compete. And that's frankly stupid and wrong. Which is, when I read that, I said, okay, so this is just a political thing. They're not really trying to solve a problem here. The issue is that you come into a business, let's say McDonald's, to pick a Chicago example. McDonald's hires you as a product brand manager, like a senior manager. So you're overseeing McDonald's campaigns, you're overseeing their information, you've got access to all their demographics, their product lines, who buys, where they buy it, when they buy it, where these products go. So you come in and you work there for 3 or 4 years. You have all this experience, and then Burger King calls you up and says, hey, come on over here. Now, you're not going to take McDonald's formula for the sauce for the Big Mac with you, because that's a trade secret. But it's impossible. And if you were to use it, that McDonald's would be aware of it, and they could link it right back to you. But it's impossible for you not to use all of the information you've learned about McDonald's operations, which they paid you to learn, you know, about marketing hamburgers, which they paid you to learn. It's impossible for you not to use that information and that background knowledge in the new job. You're going head to head against McDonald's in your new position. You know where all the product bodies are buried. You know all the weaknesses of their distribution network, all of this stuff. And this is not something that's going to be actionable as a trade secret. And so what McDonald's does, and in my opinion quite reasonably, is they say, look, you can't go to work for another national burger chain distribution company or burger chain company. If you know, Tom Howe's burger...
For how long? Forever?
Well, no. I mean for some reasonable period, 6 months, you know, a year.
So what happens in the meantime? You have to sit out and not get paid?
Yes, if they hire you, yes. Otherwise, you can go to work in some other industry. Or you can go to work for Tom's Burger Bar down on Lake Street, which doesn't have a national distribution setup, and you're not bumping into it. And Tom, you know, you get paid for this. This is part of your job. So you're getting paid, you know, as part of your compensation.
I think you're talking about a head of a distribution network. I'm with you. What I'm saying, this is walking down the chain everywhere.
So that's the positive reason that let's go back to the first issue that I raised, which is the FTC doesn't have constitutional authority to do this, and I assume that's why the Chamber of Commerce immediately filed a lawsuit against them. So that we'll put that off to the side, because you and I aren't going to fight about that or argue about that. And there's not much discussion to say anyway. I mean, that's going to be something. A court's going to have to sort it out. And what the Biden people are counting on is that it'll take a court at least through the election, and they can say, we shut down non-competes. The problem with a non-compete is you have these idiotic employers like Tom's Burger Bar on Lake Street, who say, okay, I don't want you to compete with any other, you know, to go to work for any other burger joint in the Chicago metro, you know, Chicagoland area, which is huge. And that would be, in Illinois law, that's a misuse of a non-compete. It's not enforceable. There were companies...
Back up. When you say not enforceable, who decides that except a court, and how long are you in court?
Well, it typically... And I can't remember if the Illinois law shifts attorney's fees, but a lot of these states, here in Colorado, for example, shift attorney's fees. If you go into court to challenge an inviolate or an avoidable non-compete, and you win, you get your attorney's fees paid. So that's an incentive to provide for protection. Otherwise, I mean, if it's voidable. If it's an unenforceable agreement, a judge decides that, and typically they decide it right out of the gate. It's not, in most cases, a question of fact.
I can't imagine anybody here getting on a docket inside of 2 years.
Well, I don't, with a judge on an injunction? No. But these are injunction cases.
Okay.
So if an employer has a non-compete and the employee quits, goes to work in violation of the non-compete, the employer goes into court. Usually you get a hearing typically within 10 days and argues to enjoin to prevent the employee from working for the competition. And the court rules right there. You know, this is enforceable, this is likely unenforceable. And if the court refuses to grant the injunction, the case is effectively over. And it happens very quickly. It's expensive, but it's not ruinous. But to go back to the issue, typically, even in cases where, for example, an employee has a lot of knowledge that you would want to enjoin, non-competes become unenforceable because of the time limits. So I beat a non-compete case in an IT setting where the non-compete was for a year. And I put testimony on at the injunction hearing from one of the company's own people who said, you know, how fast before your products become obsolete? And the guy said, you know, somewhere between 6 and 8 months. I said, then why is the non-compete for a year? If the worst, in the worst case scenario, it's going to be 6 to 8 months before this guy can, you know, the information this guy walks out with is useless. And you know, the court said, yeah, it's too long, it's void. Now you get into interesting situations because the employer...
Does the court say it should be 6 or is it voided totally?
Oh no, this is exactly where I'm going. The employer said, well, we'd like it modified to 6 months. And the court said, I'm not your attorney. I don't write your agreements. And I'm not going to write this one.
God.
So the agreement was void. Another big one is geographic areas.
Well, you heard Kevin yesterday?
No.
He was talking about when he went to work for this bank. Of course, Kevin reads everything. That's why nobody likes him. nobody wants me mouse it up with a guy. But he reads the thing, and they have the big interview with the president of the bank. And he said, I'm not signing up for a year-long non-compete. And the president says, by the way, do I have one of those? The lady goes, yeah. And he goes, I don't want one either.
yeah. Well, it's so geographic areas is another issue. So for example, in medical practice groups, you'll have a doctor who will sign in with a practice group. He will develop a really significant patient list, and then he's going to leave and set up practice across the street. So most medical practice non-competes will say you can't set up a competing practice within 5 miles of us or within a specific, you know, metropolitan region. Sometimes those are enforceable. Sometimes they're not. It depends on the density of competing firms.
Well, that's how it was explained to me years and years ago by an attorney, because I asked him about non-competes on the trading floor. And by the way, his view of it is exactly like yours. By the way, he's a real bright guy, so it wouldn't surprise me. He goes, well, if you get a non-compete for somebody on the CBOE floor and you're trading in the telephone pit with 7 people, and your clerk has a non-compete when you put him on a badge, well, if he goes somewhere else and he stands right next to you in telephone, you might have a complaint. But if he heads over to the OEX where there's 350 people, it's really hard to say he's competing with you in telephone when he's not even near you.
Well, exactly. And so we defeated a non-compete case in another situation where the executive was restricted from working, I think, in like a tri-state area around Chicago, so Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana, and you know, we said here are the number of businesses, and he was a senior executive with an auto parts business, and we said here are the number of competing entities within this within this region, and there were hundreds, and the court said, so what's the difference between this guy coming on and any one of another, you know, 250 into a market of another 250 competitors. Now, the flip side of that argument is, well, restricting this guy doesn't really restrict competition, but it restricts him personally.
Yeah.
And the courts hate that. So generally, you can make the argument that there's no reason to restrict this guy from working when you've got X amount of competition. His impact on the market is going to be negligible, and on your business is going to be negligible.
We got a dish to break here a little bit. You know, it's funny, whenever we talk, it's funny, you always come up with the incredibly sensible argument, and yet there's always the sub-argument is, I think the courts here in Cook County, nobody trusts them to do anything. You know, the regular people are really locked out of that system in terms of money and time.
I've been in Cook County on these issues, and when I got in front of judges, I mean, I've probably been in front of 30 or 40 different Cook County judges, you know, while I was practicing there in Cook County, and then a whole bunch of federal ones. But, you know, with one notable exception, I thought they were pretty good in terms of how they manage the law and how they manage these issues.
Well, I'm not denying that. I'm just saying it getting in there and those kinds of things are the problem after the COVID stuff. It's, I mean, nobody thinks that all of a sudden you can get a hearing in a week. If you can, then I'm totally wrong. I mean, by the way, I'd love to be wrong on this one.
You can. My experience has been you can get in within 10 days.
Well, that's
on
terrific.
Something like this.
All right, we got a million other topics when we come back. S&P futures down 35, NASDAQ futures down 183. Meta's now down 71.50, so it's not coming back at all. IBM, a little bit. It's 15.73 instead of 16, but that's a dead cat bounce. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Rick Pappas on the board. We have Lou Michaels with us. S&P futures down 35. NASDAQ futures down 180. This became, as the day wore by yesterday, we don't know, yesterday we were okay. The Dow was down 42, just after two big up days. S&P was up 1 and NASDAQ was up 16. So then Meta's earnings came out and IBM's earnings came out. IBM was down 6, then it was only down 1, and now it's down 16. So as people started talking, and as the Meta people came out and started talking about this group losing money, that group's losing money, and they did the, one of their outfits, I got it here someplace, anyway, one of their, what was it, Greg? Their one place lost $3 billion, the AI group or something? Some massive amount of money that somebody, one of their divisions lost, even though the rest of the place was pretty much okay. So I don't know what the story was with there. Over in Europe, you know, we were talking down 20% stock price. It's only down, 15% now, but that's massive amounts of money in terms of, DAX down 123.7%. FTSE is up 52.6%. CAC around down 68.8%. That's interesting. The FTSE is up. Over in Asia, the Nikkei down 831, 2%. They were up yesterday. Hang Seng up 83.5%. They're still over 17,000, 17,284. Shanghai up 8.3%. Again, I just went over what yesterday was. The bonds unchanged at 4.65, but you know, it's just dribbling up here. The Bund, 2.58 unchanged. The Pan up 2.5, 2 basis points, first time over 90.91. And we have oil up 17 cents, 82.98. Brent up 19 cents, 88.21. Natural gas up a penny, 166, still very low. RBOB up a penny, 275. One of these days we're going to ask Greg to find out where's the bottom on the natural gas. Is it, it's been down in this 166, 168 range about 4 times now. Keeps bouncing, but I wonder about this time. Gold up 220. 23.40, first time gold's been up a little bit here. Silver up 10 cents, 27.45. Copper up 7 cents, 253. That's been the strongest out of these metals lately. We have the U.S. dollar actually weaker today. The euro is up 107, it was down to 106. British pound 125, it was under 125, so the dollar's a little weaker today. We have crypto down 421. This is the Bitcoin 63,813. Big mouthful there. What do you got for us, Greg? I'm going to say the Sox probably lost again.
The Facebook thing, and yes, they did. The Facebook thing was their Reality Labs.
Yeah, what is that?
That's part of the Metaverse project. Their good news is the Reality Labs, what was it? Their revenue was up 30%, $440 million, but they had an operating loss of $3.85 billion.
How do you lose that much?
Oh, easy.
Do you have that many people
decide
working
to
there?
Join the Metaverse and dedicate a couple thousand people on it, and a couple years later, you know. Whatever. Okay, yeah. Anyways, back in the real universe, 6:36 here in Chicago, 38 degrees, sunny to partly cloudy, high of 51 today. Phoenix, 69, high of 97 today, sunshine and a breeze in the afternoon. High of 83 today in Phoenix.
It's been 96. It's been hot.
Yeah, it's been hot. It's a little cooler today, and it's going to be lots of sun, but there's going to be a breeze with a high of 83 there. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 17 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 43 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 19 minutes, and the Stevenson, 294 of the Ryan, is 30 minutes. Sports, NBA playoffs. The East Heat beat the Celtics. That was 111-101. The West, the Pelicans lose at Thunder. That was 92-124. MLB, Diamondbacks lose at Cards, 1-5. White Sox lose at Twins, 3-6. And the Cubs beat the Astros at Wrigley. That was 3-4. And the NFL draft tonight. That's 7 Central, 8 Eastern. You can watch it on ABC, ESPN, whatever. Bears expected to take Caleb Williams, number one.
He talks like he's the best in the world.
Yeah, he's. I think that's a lock.
You know, sure it is.
They've been telegraphing.
So we're up to what, 8 or 9 number one picks on quarterbacks in the last 20 years?
This time's different.
Oh yeah, this time for sure.
Also, new stadium proposal.
I'm a fader on that.
I think anything less than what, 4.6 billion?
Well, Prisco,
they're saying it's 4.6 billion. I think it's gonna be way more than that.
The Pritzker says no dice, so that's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they had a bit, you know, I don't, frankly, if I were the Bears, and I'd keep this ping pong going, but if I were the Bears, there's no way I'd sign up to any kind of arrangement with the city managing it.
I think the city should have taken it right away and said, if you can do this, give us $2 billion and guarantee we'll guarantee 2.3 and you guarantee the rest. And there's no way it's going to get done for less than five.
You two lovely creatures, you do both realize that the last two stadiums were built both have two teams in them to try and cover costs.
Yeah.
And was with the debt wrapped in.
Yeah,
this
was, well, yeah, nobody cares.
This
about
was
that,
with
yeah.
supposedly the cleanup and whatever renovation to the park they want to do with Soldier Field. There's no way. I don't believe it for a second.
How is a team... We got other stuff talking about. We'll talk about this maybe more next week, Lou, as this plays out a little more. But how does a team that makes $200 million as a family and pays $6.5 million in rent feel like they're aggrieved?
I mean, clearly they're not. They're committing $2 billion, or they want to commit $2 billion, which is stupid in my opinion.
They are nowhere near in the world committing $2 billion. First of all, the Halases don't have $2 billion.
That's so, right. I was going to say that I don't know who's lending them the money. But that's a risky loan.
And they want to join the best franchise in the history of franchises.
They consider themselves aggrieved because when they go to the ownership meetings, they got Jerry Jones, They got what's his face out in Kroenke, out in L.A., holding up these gorgeous new facilities, and saying, "Look at us, come to us," and they look around and say, "How come we haven't got a Super Bowl here in Chicago?" You know, they had a Super Bowl in Minneapolis for
his six. By himself. That was all privately financed.
But that's a minor detail.
You know,
well, I'll give you a quick rundown as to why the city here, despite the fact that the thing's not allegedly big enough, why they don't have a Super Bowl. And this went on for a while, and I don't know if it's the plan now, but you probably know this. Again, we'll kick most of this the next week, because I want to talk about a lot of other stuff here. But the Bears, actually, the city, Mayor Daley, and he was so proud of this, because I used to talk to him about it at the club all the time. They actually got the city, when they built Soldier Field for $600 and some million. At the same time, like the one in Nashville went up for $350, which is nicer. You know, I mean, but the Soldier Field is certainly functional. There's no question about that. I mean, people go there, they pay an awful lot of money, and the Bears make a lot of dough. It's not like they don't show up. They do, and the ticket prices are very high. So they got $100 million from the NFL. Okay, now that $100 million normally isn't, I'll use the term, a check. Normally, the $100 million you get from the NFL is this total line of BS that we will bring you a Super Bowl, by the way, that's worth it to your city for $100 million. That's how much New York, that's how much Minneapolis, that's how much you guys are going to benefit by having a Super Bowl in your town. And they talk these people into believing that the number is really $100 million. So the Bears got the cash, so they were never going to get the Super Bowl. They weren't going to get both. Everybody forgets that. You guys are, I think the stadium
the stadium they're saying would cost $3.2
billion. How much all the renovations
and all that, you know, around it would cost $1.4 billion.
Okay, so what did the one in L.A. cost, and what did the
five and a half.
Okay, so
five and a half, and that's
not a dome.
It's similar to...
No, it's not. It doesn't open and close.
This one doesn't open and close either. This would be a fixed...
Oh, fixed one.
Yeah, fixed one with a giant window on the side. I don't know if you saw it. Maybe I should post the pictures.
But there's no transportation. There's no parking. There's no anything.
That's supposedly baked into the cost of renovating the entire property.
I'll take the over on all this.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the weird part about Soldier Field, I mentioned to Kevin yesterday, or I mentioned to Jan... Because Kevin was already off. Of course, Kevin researched it and texted me afterward. You know, Lou and Greg, that when the Soldier Field obviously was, I'm going to do a thing tomorrow. Kevin and I are going to do a thing about the history of Soldier Field tomorrow. But it was considered a landmark because it was built for World War One soldiers or
only
something.
Only the columns are landmark.
Well, okay. First of all, the original thing was a landmark. Then they said, okay, if you're going to do stuff to the rest of it was butt ugly. You only got to keep the columns, all right? So they put this thing in Soldier Field because it was a landmark, and that's what they had to do. And when they were done, the landmark, whoever does landmarks, Lou, help me here, said, you know what? You screwed up so bad, it's no longer a landmark. So it's no longer a landmark now. So they could tear it down.
It's a federal historical sites and antiquities kind of...
Yeah, but now it isn't.
Under the Department of the Interior.
Yeah, but now it isn't.
No, I know.
So they wrecked it so much. Now you could tear it down. So it's like... You couldn't write fiction like, hey, what's the story with this the Speaker of the House? Did the guy bring a can of gasoline to this thing at Columbia or what?
Well, I mean, you get invited to a situation to a speech like this, and you get invited to perform, but you know that you're going into a lion's den, so why not, you know? You might as well just say, listen, you know, I'm going to make this political. I'm not going to try to mollify anybody. I'm not going to try to do anything other than basically say, you guys are idiots. Get off the lawn. Stop acting like you support terrorism, which is what you're doing right now, and go back to class. And the reaction of the people there was exactly what he wanted. If you're a Republican candidate, you want this because these are Joe Biden's people out here. You know, these are Democrats.
So I don't buy that part at all.
What that you would antagonize?
That everybody that you, I buy the part where he wants to look tough, but What I wanted to ask
you. No. He's not necessarily wanting to look tough. What he wants to do is show that there's an alternative to this. And Tom, these people are all Democrats.
But
all the university people are.
But everybody.
So he's in there saying this is what Democratic.
I'm not so sure that that's the case. But the thing that I wanted to zero in on here.
You
always bring up stuff that is just as interesting as mine.
We have a collegiate product that is producing enough terrorism supporters and anti-Semitic bile that I thought we had put the cork in this bottle, decades ago.
I am vastly opposed to Netanyahu's conduct of this. But I am absolutely, I will physically fight anybody who says
this is not Netanyahu.
Okay, but I'm saying the people on the right are saying any criticism or on the left, any criticism of anything the guy does is anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Semitic at all.
This is all right. So let's back up. This is not Benjamin Netanyahu's war. There is a war cabinet that is making all the decisions. He's a member of it. But he's outvoted. He has no control over what's happening over there. Individual control. The country right now is being run by a war cabinet.
Okay.
He's a relatively small part of this. This does not reflect Benjamin Netanyahu's policies, number one. Number two, Israel's a democracy. You would have to go a long ways in Israel to find somebody who is saying, yeah, I think we need to negotiate and have a ceasefire right now.
They also can't be so big in their drawers that they think they can go this alone. They lose us, they're out.
But they're not. I mean, their point right now is, it doesn't matter if we lose the United States in the short term or even the long term.
Oh boy, I think that's a really bad idea.
We have to eliminate. But here's how this is going to work. They have. Listen to the United States, and they have not done what a significant number of their people are calling for, which is the bulldozing of Gaza and the driving of those people out of.
We have significant people here that want to nuke the border. I mean, those people are idiots too.
They are not a majority, and you know that the majority of people in Israel are in favor of a major military response that effectively destroys Hamas. As a functioning entity, and so whether we come in and say you can't do that, the Israeli military has the wherewithal to do that, but they are playing ball with us, and so the idea that this is some kind of rogue thing going on over there is wrong.
All I'm saying, Lou, is you have to look at people's reactions, and the reactions are. Depends on who the people are. Some people, I was out with some people last night. These guys are attorneys. They are so pro-Israel, I can't even go there. And they are nowhere near anti-Semitic at all. And one guy says to me, you can't have people in hospitals getting killed what you're doing.
Of course you can.
Even if Hamas is in the building, you can't do that on a world stage.
The short answer is, yes, you can.
Well, hey, look what it's getting them.
Pardon me?
And look what it's getting them.
We blew apart.
I know
several hospitals in Iraq.
Okay, and
in Syria.
Does that make it right?
People screamed. Well, legally it was proper. Screamed for a while because they said, "Oh my God, look what we're doing." But the short answer is,
you know what, Lou,
the guys who started this war.
I have never
to blame.
When you say people forget, I've not forgotten. If I end up in hell and I see Rumsfeld, I'm going to nail him right in the nose.
Well, first of all, the last big hospital attack was not, I don't believe, was under Rumsfeld.
It's only because he wasn't there.
No, it was actually under Obama,
okay.
I believe. So the short answer is the operation over there is A, at the request of a democratically elected, being done in... by a democratically elected government.
But he also
that its population is after.
But didn't he cancel elections?
Hold, who?
Oh, Netanyahu.
No. Their elections aren't scheduled until, I think, next fall.
Okay, but don't they have some deal where they can call him early over there and he stopped that?
I think you're thinking of Vladimir Zelensky.
I know him for sure did. But I thought Netanyahu, there's a way over there where they can call him early, like in Britain, and he canceled that.
If the majority of the parliament forces an election, they can do that.
Okay.
I'm unaware that that's happened. There may have been some idiots who were calling for elections in the middle of a war, but that I'm unaware that they have somehow thwarted their normal government process. So again, this is not Netanyahu who is the boogeyman that Hamas is focusing on. He's not the boogeyman. It's a war cabinet, number one. Number two, the war cabinet is carrying out the desires, as democratically elected leadership is carrying out the desires of the Israeli population.
Maybe.
Number three, Hamas. What do you mean maybe?
Maybe.
Name me a public opinion poll that says that the Israeli people do not want Hamas destroyed.
Well,
the majority of them.
Of course they do. But at what price?
All right. Well, so put that aside. Number three, the people that are responsible for these war crimes are Hamas, who and under international law or any other standard, which is using its civilian population as a shield. And Hamas can end this tomorrow. All they have to do is surrender. They started the conflict. All they have to do is surrender. So from a moral and legal lane perspective, all of this should be falling on Hamas. Number four, the Israelis have conducted themselves in a way that even we would not have conducted ourselves in this kind of a combat situation. And in a restrained humanitarian way, which I think is totally incompatible with their military goals, but they've conducted themselves that way. Number five, they have listened to us. We have, the only reason this is an issue about with respect to their conduct is because the president is talking out of both sides of his mouth at the same time, trying to mollify his, quote, far left wing or Muslim voters in Michigan. At the same time, he feels he has to support Israel because they're the only democracy in the area.
Because there's two sides of the story. I'm the biggest supporter of Israel. Well, not the biggest, but there is. But the count, just like in Vietnam, it starts to go ahead of you. How many people in Vietnam were getting killed? The kid getting shot in the street. These are nobody for a second.
It's a radically different situation.
They're always different.
This is an existential conflict.
The person I talked to last night, and he's the most level-headed dude. He goes, "We're up to 30,000, and we know a whole lot."
No, we're not. That's
okay.
Hamas figure, and that's been debunked by Hamas.
Whatever. I mean, we're not going to get anywhere on this one because I don't know why I'm on somebody's side, and yet I'm having so much trouble here because I'm saying that there is somewhat of a limit, and you need to.
There is. The Israelis are not conducting that operation in anything other than a remarkably restrained way.
There are people in this country. One of them was a famous actor who had nothing but issues when he came back, and he ended up being talking about Jimmy Stewart. The guy was screwed up for 5 years when he came back because on a bomber mission, they bombed some city. There was no reason to bomb him and killed all these people. He's like, what did I do that for? I mean, we care about this kind of stuff, people like me. I mean, you try and back off.
I know war is dirty, but
if the Hamas guys find a way to get in the damn hospital in the bottom, you got to find a way to get them out of there or do something, but you can't bomb the hospital and say the other people are just in the way. You can't do that.
If Israel has not done that.
Okay.
Israel has
how many innocent people? How many innocent people got to go before, you know, whatever?
Well, I mean, when you have one combatant that uses quote unquote innocent people, and by the way, you know, most people in Gaza voted for Hamas.
All right. Well, so
support them.
Well, you know
wait a minute. When you say innocent people, you know, this is not like France or even Germany in 1944. This is a population that supports what happened on October 7th, and they believe in it, and they want it to happen again.
Everybody
That's
in
the
Russia,
population that Israel is working.
Everybody in Russia just voted for Putin. Everybody in China allegedly votes for this guy.
No.
So does that make them? If all of a sudden we have a war with China, we got to kill every Chinese person?
No, but it means that the population bears some responsibility for the government that they've installed.
They tried that at Tiananmen Square. How'd that work out?
And Hamas, what does that have to do with it? Hamas was installed by a popular vote, and Hamas is, by a fairly wide margin, supported by that population. So to some, I mean, you've got a reasonably good argument that, okay, fine, if you elect and support terrorists to go out and massacre your neighbors, you really don't have much of an objection when your neighbors come back in and eliminate the threat, and you're part of the threat.
This doesn't sell in today's world, though. It does not sell.
It doesn't.
To a certain point.
So let me just argue then, and this is why you and I are going to have a fight on this always. That's why this is anti-Semitic rather than anti-Israeli, because the world does tolerate this. They tolerate it in all kinds of places. The only place they don't tolerate it is in Gaza. They tolerate it with the Russians in Ukraine. They tolerate it with the Russians in Chechnya. They tolerate it with the Saudis in Yemen. They tolerate it with the Iraqis and ISIS. The world press. The people that you're saying object. The people that you're saying object when Israel does. When Israel goes in and fights an urban combat operation.
Well, there's a. We can't go through it now, but there's a massive history to this Middle East thing. I mean, we know that. How many starting with God knows what war, and somehow or another there are people that have been pushed to the side. Palestinians nobody wants. It doesn't appear the Egyptians don't want them. I don't know if they're bad people.
You know why, and let's talk about history. You know why they don't want them.
I don't.
You know, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know
what,
why.
What is okay? You know what Black September is?
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, that was an organization that did a whole bunch of stuff.
No, Black September. Black September is the September in 1968, 69,
yeah,
68,
yeah.
I think.
That's right.
When the Palestinians attempted to take over the government of Jordan to depose the king, and the Jordanian, the head of Jordan, turned the military loose on them, murdered a bunch of them, killed a bunch of them, drove them into enclaves in the West Bank and into Jerusalem and into Gaza. Drove them out of Jordan because they were a disaster as a population.
Well, without a doubt.
I mean, the reason nobody in the Arab world wants the Palestinians within their borders is because they've proven themselves over and over again to be dangerous.
Okay, well, we don't have that much time. We'll get back to the question and again, by the way, we're both making some points here, and I'm agreeing with you more than you think I am. I'm not arguing with you.
We're having a discussion.
All I'm saying is there is always a limit when people got cameras all over the place.
I agree, and the Israelis have not, at least by any meaningful standard, have not conducted themselves in anything other than
a nationally legal manner. And I know tomorrow Hamas should show up with the hostages and get the thing stopped. I mean, I get it. I mean, they still haven't done that. They're still bad people. You're right.
Won't.
I mean, I'm with you on all that. But in regards to the thing at Columbia, this is the part that it's not just this politician, but it bothers a living bleep out of me all over the place in our business, okay? You need to investigate people in Europe and using God knows what means. If you want to sign up an account here, we have to worry about you being part of the Interpol or someplace.
Yeah.
Lude, it's not our friggin' job. It's their job. Now, this guy walks in and he says, the president of the university should resign because she can't control us. She doesn't have a police force. She doesn't have a National Guard. What the hell is she supposed to do?
She could. She certainly does. She has the New York City police force. All she has to do is say, I invite the police in to clear this. She already did it once.
Okay.
She's not willing to do it again.
But I mean, this is a national problem. This isn't her problem.
It is her problem locally.
I understand that. I'm not trying to be an idiot here.
They shut it down.
But he didn't offer any help or anything. He just said, by the way, you aren't doing it. What are you supposed to do?
The reason he's mad at her, and I'm going to have to run here in a minute. The reason he's mad at her is because she came into Congress and testified that, yeah, this violates our rules. This is against all of our standards. I've removed the guy who was screaming, you know, death to Jews from the faculty. A, she didn't remove him. He's still there.
Oh, she didn't. Wow. B, I thought she did.
He's B. No, he's still there. B, she said this is all against our principles and our policies, but she will not. She told this to Congress. She will not, to the House of Representatives Committee. She will not take the action necessary to deal with it. She is, and what is fomenting there, Tom, is anti-Semitism. You know, it's kill the Jews. You know, death to the Jews. Kill. You know, burn Tel Aviv to the ground. This is not. You know, I know you like to make the distinction between being anti-Zionist and anti-Jew, and as far as I'm concerned, there's no difference. But the stuff that's boiling out of Columbia, the stuff that's boiling out of these other universities, it's unsafe for a Jewish student to walk on those campuses.
I guess it's not here. I've never a lot
and
of if people
that
are
get you a call for if that should get you.
I would.
A
I would. I would. I don't. I guess I'm just not seeing it that much here. The people that I know that are against what's going on are strictly against. Maybe being a little too aggressive, you know, in the Palestinian area. I haven't heard anybody here that I know of, is anti-Semitic. I mean,
well, this is
what's going on out there. You're right, and some of that's been Northwestern here.
And you guys haven't had a problem at Northwestern?
Yeah, I was saying Northwestern. We've had a problem. That's the one spot, but I haven't. It's not like it's percolating through. I haven't heard anywhere in Chicago. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
imagine. I mean, people are screaming at these kids go back to Poland or whatever where they.
Well, I admit to being naive because I can't. I mean, I guess.
Imagine you had a bunch of guys in white sheets and pointy hats with burning crosses, setting up on a campus, and saying all our black students should go back to Africa.
That would not be good.
Well, how long do you think that would last?
Not very. Well, hopefully, not very long at all.
But the corollary with respect to the Jewish students is allowed to continue. That's why I say it's anti-Semitic.
What do you think if you interviewed the average one of these people about the history of what's going on over there? Anybody even know, or are they just on board?
I haven't seen enough interviews to be able to tell you. I think a lot of this is just a bunch of. A large number of these people have been raised to think that they need to be social justice warriors, and this is the social justice war that they want to sign up for.
Yeah, there's not. It's not like these people are all Palestinians. I mean, what are they? Is it regular kids? I don't know what's a regular kid.
At Columbia, they're the daughters, mostly the daughters of the scions of industry.
Jesus. Well, Lou. I don't think we're ever going to solve this one, buddy. But thanks for all the stuff. I mean, you're. I just, however they do it, I just want to see a ceasefire as soon as possible. And I like want to see these guys give the hostages back. And if there's any possible way of going back to whatever normal is, I just want to see it happen. I just, you know.
I if I could wave the magic wand, I would make it happen. But you know, frequently the right thing to do is often the hardest thing to do.
Well, at least those guys are somewhat talking, somewhat. The Hamas, it appears that the Hamas people and the Jewish government have some way that they talk to each other. They hadn't gone very far yet, but the Ukraine Russian thing, I don't see those guys ever talking. Do you?
Not unless Ukraine starts winning. This is what Putin has been very clear. He wants the destruction of Ukraine. He wants the elimination of Ukraine as a functioning entity, and that's what he's going for. And because we faltered in our resupply efforts and Europe faltered, Putin sees an advantage, and so he withdrew his negotiation.
How much? How quickly the stuff we're sending is this get them back on track, or is it just a Band-Aid over a broken leg?
I mean, it's their biggest problems right now are demographic. They don't have enough bodies. I mean, we can give them enough weapons, I think, to make it very hard for the Russians to operate over there. But at the end of the day, they can, you know, the Ukrainians, I think, have to kill Russians at the rate of like 20-1 to even the demographics.
I was going to say they got to kill way more Russians, and Putin doesn't seem to care, and the people don't seem to care. They must care.
I don't I think they look at this as a completely different way than you and I do.
Well, I don't know if anybody wants to lose their kid, Lou.
But they are happy to continue to send their husbands and sons and fathers to war.
There's got to be a different word there than happy, resigned or something.
Maybe.
Maybe the old man drinks too much. Go get yourself killed. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Everybody closed in the ski resorts, or is a few still open?
No, I think they're almost all closed by now.
What's the? You guys got floods? All that snow up there?
No. It's melting slowly, and we're going to get some rain. So we're snowpack is doing what it does. It's starting to fill the reservoirs.
Good. Maybe we'll get a little gas in Lake Mead too. Who knows? All right, buddy,
yep,
take care of yourself. S&P Futures down 35. NASDAQ Futures on 1. It hasn't moved since we got here. We still got Meta down. Well, now it's down 75. That's the lowest. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Come on, flounder. You can't spend your whole life worried about your mistakes. You f***ed up. You trusted us.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P Futures down 34. NASDAQ Futures down 186. You would think this kind of a move would be bouncing around, but Greg, these things haven't moved a dollar since we got here, have they? They're right there. And it's even though Meta was down 67, now it's down 77, so it's continuing to slide. I think the low was down 20%, wasn't it? I got it down 15.5.
Still up, what, 300 or 400% from last year?
Well, how many? If you got a second, why don't you dig and see how many shares outstanding here? This is a $100 billion move or something, at least in market cap, isn't it? It's got to be. Do we have Mr. Dan?
Yes.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
Great.
How did these guys manage to piss away $3.1 billion in their whatever that thing is, the artificial something something?
Oh, it's yeah. Well, a lot of it, frankly, is just poor money management, and a lot of it is this sort of overspending craze. And it's not only them; it's a lot of companies, it's a lot of businesses, it's a lot of people. Actually, there's been a lot of what I might refer to as overspending. This has kind of been a trend. I mean, this has been a trend. Less attention focused on the balance sheet, if you will, and more attention on focused on just throwing money at what they perceive as good investments or a good product or a good service or something to add to their business. This is a trend. If you want to think more big picture, this is a trend that has happened, and it started happening, in the COVID period, right, where a lot of money was just thrown into the system. And I think for corporations and organizations, there's still a belief they can do that. And the sad part about that is that ends up going on, that ends up adding debt, that ends up causing problems with, it's an issue that hasn't been addressed. So this is going to come back to haunt them, I believe. And, fortunately, if we look at the earnings that have come out recently, we have seen many companies that have done well. The pricing power is still there in many sectors. I was thinking about Chipotle just having, you know, beaten on both top and bottom. I'm thinking, you know, some of the companies have actually continued to manage well, but we are in an interesting period, Chief. We're seeing something that we haven't seen in a while, and I think the reason that we're seeing this is because we're still adjusting to higher rates. So whether it be spending or expansion, and I think of that as being a very, very much a tech thing. Without the concern about having enough money there's been less concern about managing in a conservative way and more sort of action showing continued spending, if you will. So I don't know if I blame it on what happened during COVID or just the mindset that we've been in, or whether there's something that is tends to be more prevalent in the tech sector than in say in most other sectors of the economy, but it's going to create a problem.
What how much of this? I don't want to really get into it. I got a whole bunch of other stuff to talk to you about today. I don't want to get into how much of this is could be. Boy, I hate like hell when we have start talking about government movements into management type of thing. By the way, these guys have 2.6 billion shares outstanding.
2.6 billion, wow.
So $75 is kind of a lot.
I heard a statistic yesterday when they were talking about earnings that of the X number of million people in the world, close to 50%, if not more, are actually, have Facebook accounts or some Meta account, if you will. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, well,
to have that kind of,
I don't know how many people are active. I know everybody seems to have one, whether they look at it or, I mean, whether you're part of the advertising thing or not, I don't know. But
right. Exactly, and that's exactly what it is. It is the advertising. That's what's going to bring in the revenues. But just the fact that it's that widespread, interesting too. The whole issue with TikTok and the sort of the change. I don't want to use the word aversion, but my aversion to investing, if I have to use the word aversion. To investing in tech is just the rapid change. So, it, depending on your investor or your clients or your investor base, do you really want to be investing in any company or any trend that is going to be this volatile and is going to have this widespread? Because we know that there are going to be issues, just like with Tesla. I mean, Tesla's earnings came out and they continue to underperform. There's a mentality in that sector that just is not. I think there's a mentality that's quite different than there is in, say, the industrial sector or say healthcare or financials or media. Pretty much any other sector of our economy. If there's a mentality that's tends to be more short term, there's a mentality that's a herd mentality. Everybody's going to jump on board with the latest technology. Everybody's going to jump on board with, and that I think is actually from an investor's point of view, not necessarily a good thing, because we don't want to be jumping on board with every new trend.
Well,
that I'm not crazy about investing in the tech sector in general, but I get less interested when I hear things like what's happened with Meta recently, what's happened with Tesla recently. And I have I had lunch the other day with a client, and just hearing the story about some of the personal investments. Oh yeah, we've made X 100% in this stock or in that stock. And I said, yeah, that's great. Keep your personal account, because I'm not going to invest in those areas. I just think they involve a very different mindset. We, on the other hand, are invested in areas that we think have a lot of upside potential. But preserve capital and diminish volatility. And volatility is at a high right now, both in the equity markets as well as the fixed markets. So the strategy that we've had about investing in T-bills is really paying off well right now.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And let's continue that in a second. But back up a hair from what you were saying, Dan, about these kinds of companies. And it's like, you and I, well, our ideas, I think, in our business, they don't come and go. But in anything, you see what happens at these places. In some companies, like your health industry, because of the patents, they manage to amass so much more money than anybody ever dreamed.
Yes.
That they don't really have to innovate anymore. It's not that some don't, but they can sit around with all this money that's probably way too much given the patent laws, and basically pick off any new idea that comes by. They can outbid anybody for it. So they pile into that other area. But now what you're talking about with I'm going to say Facebook, Meta. Facebook, by any stretch, they took over for, who was the one before them? It was pretty good, but it was...
MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace. They took over, and all of a sudden the thing is, man, and I'm sitting over at in the bar, or the same table where you were, and the guy's wives are telling their girlfriends what they're cooking for dinner. I mean, yeah. Everybody was talking on this thing like it was a communication device like no before. Well, then all of a sudden, but there's no... I mean, there's patents on some of the stuff, but by and large, this is... You know, I never used it, but well, because in my industry, somebody would have to watch me every time I did it, which is really screwed up. So I never did. So it becomes this incredible idea, and all of a sudden, maybe because of the tax laws, you can't deduct dividends or whatever it is. You've got these companies with this massive amount of cash. They don't pay anybody, and all of a sudden, and maybe who knows? Maybe they don't even pay income taxes. I won't go there. But now they've got. What are you going to do for me lately? Because this thing has a half life, like you're talking about. It's 5 years, it's 4 years, it's 8 years. But somebody's going to do something different. The kids aren't going to like it. They're going to go somewhere. It has this churn to it. So you get the guy who runs the place. Is it Zuckerberg? Is that the guy who runs? Is he Meta? I keep getting those guys confused. Meta, he runs.
Zuckerberg is Meta. Yeah.
Yeah. So he comes out, and all of a sudden he goes into this. Artificial reality, which is these wild glasses and all this other stuff, and he thinks this is going to be a new best thing. And he spends like a boatload of the money that he made on Facebook, the original good idea. It's very similar if you and I, we'll take Greg with us, he's a good soul. We got an idea and we buy something and we get a bunch of investors and we run this thing to ground. We make whatever it is for the next 10 years, we make a fortune, and all of a sudden we got all this cash. And now all of a sudden, there's competitors that are pretty good, and now it becomes a commodity. Do we just say we had our great idea, we got a bunch of dough, we're going to return the money to the investors, or do we get another new idea that we know nothing about and piss away everybody's money?
That's a really good point,
yeah.
Chief. That's exactly where it is. It would be like a company that's, kind of a more traditional company or more old school company that produced a product, right? Whether it be a new Caterpillar machine or a, and then you go and you enhance that product. But you are right, there is a different mindset when it comes to tech. There's a mindset, and the reason I'm mentioning this is more from an investor's point of view, not so much criticizing the industry, but criticizing it as a place to invest and have the same type of returns. Just know that when you're going into put money into these sectors, that the way management handles things is quite different than the steady Eddie companies, the go-go names from the past, the companies that have been around for forever and ever. They have created those companies. I think a lot of manufacturing companies, industrial companies, those companies have a philosophy that has been very good to investors. You go back to General Motors or any of those companies people had stock in that they held forever and ever, right? And those stocks appreciated greatly
up to 2008, then it went bust.
Right, and that, exactly. Everything did go bust in 2008. But I think the general trend is that we knew that management really had, I don't know if I want to use the word perfected, but they had modeled a business plan that worked, and they did it in a very with a plan to have controlled growth. Controlled growth is gone. Now it's just an excitement over a topic, and I use AI as that. So anything with AI, people want to pour money in. And what I would say to any listener, be very careful if because companies are doing this as part of their marketing campaign. It isn't proven yet. There are certain companies that will win with AI, Well, we don't know who those companies are yet. So just because a company has chosen to go into that particular area, be careful, be very careful. And the other thing that I'll say about Tesla, and again, this is more of an education for listeners, there are people that I know that have Teslas, that ride them, that they think they're the best thing ever. I don't have the same thought about Tesla specifically. I like the idea of moving towards, you know, either electric or hybrid. I have a hybrid now, which I think is great. But the thing is, people again get too excited about these particular companies. You have Musk. You have a leader whose mind has been focused on other areas. It's been in SpaceX. It's been in X. It's been in. You want a manager. You want a leader. You want a CEO. You want a management team that has a passion for their particular business, that has a specialty, and is not going in five different directions because they have a lot of money. You want somebody focused on that business. This is part of our investment strategy. We meet with the senior management of the companies we invest in, and that's one of the things we look at. We want to make sure that their heart and soul is totally into the business that they're running, and that they're not going to be making acquisitions in unrelated areas, that they're not going to be shifting gears. When that happens, you better make sure that you have a really good team behind you that's going to be able to follow in your footsteps. But again, going back to, I guess, the theme we were talking about earlier.
Well, wait a second. Wait, one second. When you say that, you have to make a comment. You please do. I'll lead you into it a little bit. Zuckerberg, Musk, Bezos, they think you're investing in them, and whatever they think is their next idea is the best ones in sliced bread. And
absolutely.
You got to cut that off right when they look like they're wandering a little, like that, you say.
Absolutely. And you know, I know one other, you know, I know Kenny Bulcari and I totally agree on this, that we really got to get away from sort of falling in love with the person, right, that's running the company or just putting some, you know, a manager on a pedestal, unless they're just really good at sticking to their knitting and just happen to be good running a steel company, happen to be good running a, you know, a manufacturing company. That you just got to be careful about chasing after those egos.
They think that your money as a shareholder is their money. That's very dangerous.
Rather than having it as a collective, you know, that you're an investor in a business and that the business has a legacy that's going to move on. There's some egos involved, and you got to be really careful when you're investing in a company that's run by like a Musk. It doesn't mean that it won't do well in the short run, but if you are a long-term investor, you have to see a plan, a legacy. You have to see something that's going to continue in the future, and you have to have faith in the leader that the leader's not going to be distracted with other things.
Well, the tax law should be neutral, and it isn't. It encourages that, which is not good.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. There's no question.
I mean, I don't really want, if I'm an Amazon guy, I really don't want the guy buying like a newspaper because the newspaper said something bad about it with my money. That's not what I give him door-to-door.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, even though it's probably chump change compared to what they have, it's still, it shows lack of focus to me.
Lack of focus, precisely, yeah. It's you have to look back in history, right? Because we've been in the business for quite a while, 4 decades for me. Look back in history at those companies that have consistently performed well. And those companies aren't the ones that changed gears or shifted gears 5 different times. Those are the companies that have really stuck to what they do best. They've adjusted to the environment. They've had to make changes to deal with the environment. I go back to a company called AK Steel that I had invested in the 80s. And it was technically on the verge of, it was like double B rated. And that company did extremely well when we saw the downturn in 87, when we saw the downturn, you know, in the early 90s. There are companies that know how to manage in the tough times. They know how to adapt to the environment.
But they also had, they weren't open hearth. They were the new technology, correct?
Yes, and in a sense they really were, but they were. It's really more of the management. It's really more of, as you're saying, more of a team approach, or more of a what's best for the organization, as opposed to an individual with an ego that's running this, and you're going to chase after wherever they go. in the same manner, and again, I'll say this for the listeners, be very careful when you invest in a mutual fund that has a leader. I think of, or an ETF, I think of someone like Cathie Wood or some of the big names over the years. And I learned this early on, you know, being a fund manager in Boston. A lot of people were putting their money with certain fund managers at Fidelity, just because they were the hot manager of the day or the week or the year. And got to be very careful about that as well, because when we look at it really carefully, those managers have an incentive to perform. But you really have to look at a team. You really have to look at, you know, a process in place, you know, that is consistent. You have to look at support. You really can't just invest with one person. That, you know, you can't look at it the same way that you get the ego. Companies.
You get the ego, Dan. Plus, how many people actually, I was trying to explain it a couple of weeks ago. I actually was on with, Jan. I probably should have done it with you. If somebody gives us, hey, you two guys, how about doing a big cap fund and we'll give you $100 million? I suspect we'd probably say yes. So what exactly? I think investing public, even though I don't expect them to know much about it as you and I, but there needs to be some, you know, basic knowledge. What does, you know, big cap Bob do, or in this case, be big cap Chief and Dan? We look at keep it simple. The top 100 stocks. Say we take the top 100 stocks, the OEX, the S&P 100. We look at it and we go, IBM, okay, it's supposed to be 1.9% of the basket. And you say, their earnings are coming out, they suck. Like yesterday, we're going to say, oh no, we're going to be 1.5% of IBM instead of... I mean, and that's whether we have a group behind us or whether we do this from the seat of our pants or just some experience or whatever. Or I might say, Intel should be, you know, based on the size, should be 0.9%. And you go, I think Intel's going to have a good year. And we go 1.1% into. I mean, that's really kind of all we're doing, okay? And because we're limited, we want to be in the big cap area. It's not like we're going to say, I mean, if it's a real big cap fund, we're not going to say, oh man, American Express, they're their best years ever. It should be 1%. We're going to make it 10%. I mean, some people have done that, and all of a sudden they have two or three maybe really good years in a row. And then they stick with it. They don't change, and all of a sudden the next year they clunk when everybody else is doing okay. I mean, you have to understand it. What Dan's trying to say, you have to understand what you're asking somebody to do in the fund you're in. If you and I screw around and we're a tenth of a percent off on 100 different stocks because we kind of like one or kind of don't. One year, the market's going to return 8%. We're going to return 8.5. And if we clunk the next year, we're going to be 7.5. We're not going to be that far off, right? Because we're only nudging a little bit. But now if you take the Cathie Wood approach, where she goes, 3M, it's an old-style company. We don't want them. They're not involved in anything new. By the way, Microsoft, I love them. They're supposed to be 5%. We'll make them 15 because I'm really into this new age stuff. Well, now you're not talking about a big cap manager. You're talking about something totally different, right?
Right, absolutely.
And you know, and if you ever have somebody like that gives you two or three years in a row, all the stuff going back to when I was at the University of Chicago says that's about all you're going to get out of somebody. You got to get the hell out and try somebody else because inevitably people even out. I mean, I'm sure there's some people that don't, but I don't know.
Absolutely, and I think the other thing too to consider is, I mean, for us, we have to consider our client base, and you can make money in some of those names in the ARK, the ARK ETF, the Cathie Woods ETF, if your entry into it and your exit are at just the right time. But the buy and hold strategy and those type of investments that are going to have that level of volatility that are going to could change very drastically. And again, going back to Fidelity, the joke in Boston, or I don't know if it's a joke, but the observation in Boston was just that they gave their portfolio managers they were the star portfolio manager as opposed to the team. So the star portfolio manager at Fidelity had a lot of leeway and flexibility in how they invested. So I remember the Fidelity Magellan Fund going from a fund that was run by you know, Peter Lynch ran it at one time, but each of the managers had the flexibility, was allowed to invest how they wanted. So a fund that at one point was large cap became large cap poor became mid cap growth. And that type of change, if you will, is not good for the investor that wants to
Dan, what has to happen for them to change? I mean, you know way more about this industry than I do. If you and I, the first year we do exactly what we're supposed to do, we take the top 100 stocks and we just mess around with the percentages just a little bit. What if all of a sudden we do, the next year we become a Peter Lynch and we do go, you know, 20% Microsoft or something?
Right.
They must have to rename the fund, don't they, or do they?
They should, but they don't. And the people who, it's actually the group there in Chicago, it's Morningstar, is the one that actually will review them and say, okay, you were a large cap core fund, but now you're actually a mid cap growth fund. So kudos to Morningstar for being able to give a review. But oftentimes that review happens, or not oftentimes, all the time, that review happens after those, you know, the changes have been made to the fund, the new investments, the new focus by a new manager. And Fidelity got in a lot of trouble for doing that because they kept making these changes. And if you look back over the years, their performance has not been that great relative to other managers. They're not, you know, sticking to their knitting. They're not managing with a group or a team approach, going back to what we were saying about, you know, the Musks and the Zuckerbergs and the, you know, the looking at managers that are, you know, stars or people who are running companies that see themselves as stars, as opposed to looking at a team or a, you know what you're investing in. Now I'm going to make a big leap, and I'm going to
How about we make the leap after the break?
Okay, we'll make the leap.
Hey, what, you know, we were Morningstar's manager of the money manager of the year in 2007 or 8, one of them. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, that's terrific.
Yeah. When we come back, Dan's going to finish that thought, and we're going to want to talk a little bit about this J.P. Morgan thing in Russia. I don't know if you saw this. I sent it to you. But also a little bit more about the China situation. But I also want to pick your brain, Dan, on I don't know if I mentioned to you that I had was talking to a small college, and they were talking about, you know, they of course wanted me to recommend a money manager, and I said, well, gee, nobody. And I really talked to them about what percentage I thought they should be somewhat protected and in fixed income. And I said, you know, I have a guy who's really, really good at this fixed income stuff. And for a while, I think you guys, you just don't want to be all in. And I could not. What do you mean? That's what everybody's doing now. They have all these managers, and they're all. I can't shake. Even with people I think that are pretty smart, the idea that the next 2 years might not be like the last few, Dan. And I always have you with me when I certainly in spirit when I say, look, we do fixed income. When I say we, I mean you, and we do protected stuff. And oh, by the way, we also are just being long stuff. That's easy. I mean, we could do that. I mean, if you want us to just be long the index, I mean, right now I think some kind of a deal where you might be some percentage long the indexes and some percentage in fixed and a pretty good percentage protected, I'm not sure that isn't the balance going forward. And by the way, if we're wrong, so what? You're just down a little bit and we can adjust. I mean, but nobody wants to hear that. I mean, I won't say nobody. Some people do. But you would think these people, they just want to do what everybody else is doing, Dan. I hate to see if the market ever does turn. I was reading some article yesterday. Some guy thinks we're going down 44%. Now, how he found 44 in that 43 or 45, I have no idea. But,
yeah, exactly.
You know, but I mean, but I'm saying I don't. You know, you read that, and somebody else says we're doubling. So you got to do that with send a balloon around your head. But still, if it does, I don't really want all these people to lose all this money they spent all these years to make.
Absolutely.
Anyway, SP futures down 56. Nasdaq futures now down 252. This is getting worse. We're gonna get Dan's comments on that as well. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Lone Rock Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Greg Pappas on the board. Greg, what? There's some number must have just come out here. Now we're down 50 in the smooths and down 232. It can't be the GDP, is it? I mean, that's not that big of a. That's not a tradable number. Anyhow, but we're down, like you said, 49 in the S&P and 229 now on the NASDAQ. I've got Meta on the low that I've seen it. I think it might have been lower last night. It's down 77, 1560 at IBM now down 17. So, and some of this other stuff is kind of right with it. Microsoft's down 970, that's 2.5%. We've got Google down $5, that's 3.2%. And we've got the 10-year rate back up up another 29 points at 4.68, almost 4.7. So that is becoming a relentless irritant to the market here, and it's got to be watched. DAX down 88.5%. The FTSE somehow is up 63.8%. And I got them trading today, too. It's not like they're closed. CAC around down 62.8. So somehow the FTSE is they're doing okay. Over in Asia, Nikkei is down 831. It's 2.1%. Hang Seng up a little bit. 83, that's 0.5%. 17,284 is there. Staying over 17,000. Shanghai up 8. That's 0.3%. 3,052. They're also over 3,000. So yesterday, again, these numbers don't mean much because it was before the earnings came out. Dow was down 42. S&P up 1. NASDAQ up 16. But then right at 305, the futures tanked. Bonds up 3 basis points, 4.69, where they're actually trading. Yeah, that's right where they're trading. The TNX, by the way, if you want to see what that is. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.6 now. Japan down 2 at 0.85. Oil up 47 cents, 83.28. Kind of quiet in these low 80s here for the last couple of weeks. Brent up 47 cents, 88.49. Natural gas unchanged, 165. RBOB up 2 cents, 276. Gold up 80 cents, 23.39. It was up more earlier. Silver up 3 cents, 27.37. Copper up 8 cents, 4.54. Greg, why don't we just buy copper at like 3.80 and just kind of go on a long vacation or something? It's up every day. We've got Bitcoin, the U.S. dollar unchanged at 107 on the euro and pretty much unchanged against the pound at 125. And we've got crypto down 389, 63,846. When I say crypto, I mean Bitcoin. Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, everyone. 7:37 here in Chicago. 7:38 right now. Chicago, 38 degrees, sunny, partly cloudy. High of 51 today. Phoenix, 69 now. Sunshine and a breeze this afternoon. High of 83 there. Traffic getting worse. Kennedy from Montrose is 42 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 70 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 48 minutes. Ryan from 95th is 90 minutes, and Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 43 minutes. Sports. NBA playoffs. The East, the Heat beat the Celtics 111-101. The West, Pelicans lose at Thunder. That was 92-124. MLB, Diamondbacks lose at Cards 1-5. White Sox lose at Twins 3-6, and the Cubs beat the Astros at Wrigley. That was 3-4. NFL draft tonight, 7 p.m. Central. There in Detroit, and you can watch it on ABC, ESPN, or NFL Network. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Dan, it looks actually, maybe I'm wrong here. The GDP, this is the first measure of first quarter, correct?
Came in
at 1.8. It was supposed to be 2.4. I wonder if that means that deflator is higher, which means inflation's higher, or actually the when I say that, just to explain, you look at your GDP, it's the sum of all your services, all the domestic product of the first quarter, but then you adjust that. So say it's up 5% and your inflation is 6. We subtract this inflation from the 5 till you get minus 1 because you're trying to get a real number. So when this comes out here, I've not seen the deflator yet. So I wonder if the deflator is up, and that's why we don't like this.
You're exactly right. Yeah, that's what's going on here. It's like we're having, the numbers are showing weaker, but we're seeing, but it, that indicates that we do have more inflation at the same time. So it's being viewed at least at the moment as a negative. I know jobless claims also came out there is still a focus on jobless claims, but I think we have to be careful about looking too carefully at numbers month to month and really just looking at the trend and the direction, the direction that we're going in. And what we've been hearing lately is just the fact that inflation is still very much in the picture. We have to be careful to, I mentioned earlier about some of the earnings, and I don't know, I stuck on Chipotle just because they feed on the top and the bottom. But the reason is when you go to Chipotle as a customer, you know that you're paying more than you were a few years ago, that inflation is very much still there, and they're able to, their profit margins are larger now, which is the reason that their earnings are doing better and that they're beating and their stock price is doing better. Same thing, for example, something that people can relate to, grocery stores are having good years for the same reason. So that's your real life, those are your real life examples of the fact that inflation is still very much there. Prices are still very much there. You know, we may have some price stability, but it's at a higher level now. So I would agree with you that on the weaker than expected GDP number, it's the inflation concern. It's the deflator. It's exactly what you're saying. I'm totally
plus, I mean, we're right on the skinny part of this whole thing, Dan, and I think we have been really since 2000, and really since 2008, which is a long time. I mean, a lot of people haven't been alive that long. But we've been on the edge of this growth at this 1.5, 1, 2 maybe, after the adjustment, that if you went back, and I think I can make a real strong case that for the last 20-some years, you could make the case that the inflation rate was 2% higher than they're talking about, especially if you included hospitalization, which it should be. If you did that, Dan, you're talking about really a recession for 20 years. I mean, that's how close we are.
I agree that I agree with it, that we're that close, and I also agree that looking at the numbers, when you start getting into X food and energy, right?
Yeah.
That's what then. I mean, food and energy are a big component of our economy, and it's hard when you start getting in. When you start taking things out of the basket of goods that measures GDP, that are substantial, that affect the average consumer, that affect everybody, right?
Well, except that, I'm with you, Dan, and the thing about everybody talks on TV about gas prices. But hey, I wish if there's anything you and I could do, because I think much as I love to make like we're arguing, we're not, because I'm just trying to draw more knowledge out of you, because I'm with you 90% of the time, which isn't good radio.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm saying it is stunning. I don't want to be George Carlin. And first of all, I don't think there is such a thing as a stupid human being. I never felt that, but collectively we can be really stupid, right? Individually, no. I think know what I mean when I say that, but we can have people talk to us all day long about the gas in your car. But Dan, I don't know about you, but I'm not a truck driver. I mean, I don't do that for a living.
Right,
yet,
absolutely.
Yet we never talk about, I mean, what is the average person drives 12,000 miles a year, right? So we're talking about 1,000 miles a month, and if your car gets 20 miles a gallon, which I think most people do, I certainly didn't in a Suburban, new pickup truck, I'm closer, it's 50 gallons of gas, all right? So if gas goes up a buck, which is a huge outrage, which I don't want to pay, it's $50. What is my hospitalization either implied, if it's my company's paying it, or if I'm actually paying, what is it, $2,500?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
we're not even on the same planet. Yet nobody ever talks about that.
No, and things like property taxes,
yeah.
You know, housing, other housing costs, if you will. Absolutely, yeah. I've always been in agreement on you with that, and as even more so now that I have a hybrid.
Yeah.
So they really don't take much gas. It's and if you're in a city too, like Chicago, I mean, you have options of public transportation or other things. It isn't a right in the scheme of things. It should be sort of towards the bottom of your list of concerns when it comes to money, right?
Can I jump you for 5 minutes and tap a part of knowledge that Greg and I were talking about earlier?
Sure.
I don't know if you've heard the outrageous thing about the Bears building the stadium, right? All right. So anyway, but the deal is, Greg, kick me if I'm wrong, they're talking $4.5 billion roughly, or four, of which the Bears are somehow going to come up with $2 billion, which they don't have, which means they're going to somehow sign up for some financing that, of course, they're going to try and do through the state so it's cheaper.
Yep.
Dan, how does all... Now, this is not going to be a general obligation bond, or I don't believe.
Oh.
Kind of walk us through this, will you? I mean, what are they trying... What scam are they trying to pull? Is this going to be a bond on this? Now, the guys were the bond holders on the old place. What's the story here, Greg? After 20 years, they somehow refinanced
it? Well, that cost is supposedly rolled into the $4.6 billion. But I'm saying
they owe as much now as when they started. Right?
Of course.
They didn't pay down anything.
Right.
So, but now they're going to try and roll it.
I think it's both for Soldier Field and
Sox Park
and Comiskey or whatever it was called back then.
So the interest is paid by tax downtown on the one on Comiskey, and the other is hotel tax. So the interest is paid. The principal never kind of what would possess anybody to buy that bond? And how did the Bears find their way into the state? The governor's not going to allow it, but just if they wanted to do it, what is their plan? And who buys that? How does that become? How does that even work?
Good question. In terms of who buys it, investors like me who invest in municipal bonds could potentially buy that. So there's two types of municipal bonds. There's general obligation, which are bonds that are issued generally by states or local municipalities. The ability of the states or the local municipalities to tax, that's where you get the revenue to pay, to support the bonds. But then there's also revenue bonds that are separate from general obligation bonds. Revenue bonds are generally projects. So a project could be a stadium, it could be an airport, it could be a road, it could be a bridge. And those products are, those projects are can be financed in many cases by a government, in which case they will get the tax exempt status, which makes it a lot more attractive for an investor like me to participate. You get the tax break as an investor, which is pretty substantial in a state like Chicago, where you have both the local tax as well as the federal tax. So from an investor's point of view, they're not going to have trouble finding people to invest. From their point of view, they're able to get this municipal financing in through the state, and some of it sometimes has to do with the property where it sits and whether that's considered, who owns the property where the stadium sits. You know, the same thing would be true with an airport. Some of it also has to do with it's not as much politics, as you will, involved in this. Some of it has to do with precedent. So there are many stadiums and many airports that have been financed through municipalities. Oftentimes, the developer or the builder has a relationship with the state or the county or the city that allows this financing to happen. And it is a process that they would go through. But again, there's a precedent for this. So the precedent has been set already. It's not like a brand new thing. It's not like, it hasn't happened before. There's generally a precedent.
But the precedent is after 20 years, they still haven't paid
down. The
Bears need
the Illinois General Assembly to approve a $1.5 billion new bonding. And
there
that
you
would
go.
Be from Illinois Sports Facilities Authority.
Okay, so Dan, Chicago's had somewhat of a history with this, with the Skyway. And I won't go into that detail, but one of these days I will. But okay, so now let's say, for instance, and Greg brought this up earlier, so thank you, Greg. They still owe the $600 million. There's been no sinking fund, right, Greg? So they still owe the $600 million bucks and the original Soldier Field redo. Okay, so, and they want to roll it into this thing, all right, which you can do and just raise the taxes. I can see why they want to do that. But let's say, for instance, this is not a general obligation bond. The city's broke.
No, it isn't.
The city's broke. Okay, so let's say, for instance, this all blows up. You know, Podunk, Idaho gives the Bears some kind of a huge deal, and the Bears head out to Podunk, Idaho. And now the Soldier Field just sits there. Now the Fire's going to play there. They're going to have a concert or two or three or four. Now, there's no more revenue. The city, traditionally, has not said, you idiots that gave us the $600 million bucks, you're just bleep out of luck. The city's going to probably find a way to cover it. Now,
yes.
Now, if I invested in the city, okay, and I look at their stream of income and whatever, as bad as that may look, how does the city all of a sudden say, wait a minute, this is really our debt when it wasn't there when I looked at when I bought the city bond? I mean, how do they just get to do that? I mean, I know it's politics. You can do whatever you damn well please, but I mean, how do you just say, well, no, really, that was our stadium, even though we said it wasn't? And by the way, we'll cough up the $600 million to the bondholders. How does that go?
Yeah, it's actually, so sort of look at the analogy of a corporation, right? So a corporation that's you know, building a new plant, right? So in the case of the corporation, they're going to always be responsible for the financing on that plant and how that's done. They're going to generally be, I would say, you know, kind of in the corporate world, you're going to have experts that know how to do that. You're going to, you know, you can do a lot of financial analysis to make sure that you can meet the debt obligations of that new facility. In the municipal world, there's a lot more latitude. And the reason there's latitude is because history and precedent has shown that the government agency, the government authority, will continue to get funding. And oftentimes the funding goes right up to the federal government. So that if there is a problem, it's default rates on municipal bonds are very low. And they're very low because there is the ability to go to the next higher or to go to another municipality. So say the specific group you're talking about in Chicago will go to the city, as you mentioned, and then from the city, possibly the state or possibly another agency or possibly the federal government if necessary. If it's a facility that is bringing money into the city and it's actually, you know, when you talk about a sports event, something that you're going to have a lot of support for in the city because it brings it money into the economy, even if it's not specifically into the stadium, right? Then you're going to have this leeway, if you will. You're going to have a lot more ways of kind of working the system, which a corporation would not have. A corporation would not have that same, you know, they don't have these other layers of governmental governmental agencies or financings to go up the ladder to get the money paid for. And oftentimes they're not managed as well. And I think you make a great point, Chief, in bringing up this specific situation. They're not managed as well because you know, the people that are doing this are not people that have had the experience in the corporate world, for example.
Well, there are also people that are draining the hell out of it with the contracts they gave out to their buddies.
Absolutely, and that happens, and that is very common. That's very common, and it's interesting. So you got to wear a certain hat. So if you're wearing the hat that you're wearing right now, you're looking at it as an observer. If you're wearing the hat of an investor, the good news about investing in a facility like this or a stadium like this is that you're getting that tax break, and you know that the default rate is going to be very, very low.
Well, how do you know that? I mean, you're right. It has been, but
if you look at history, and I've been managing municipal bonds for 40 years, and you look back in history, and you see, any time there seems to be an issue, there's somewhere that funding comes, right? You know, they get the funding from another government authority, from raising taxes, from some other source. And very seldom, I mean, the default rate on municipal bonds is considerably lower than the default rate on corporate bonds. So it's an investment. It's an illiquid investment because they don't trade as much as say corporate bonds. Certainly not as much as treasury bonds. But you have a lot of comfort as a municipal bond investor in knowing that you have a percentage that's in the 90s. I mean, default rates are, you know, the default rates are, recovery rates are in the 90 percentage. So if it did default or if they didn't run into trouble, you're going to get 90% back on your dollar. So you get 90 cents back on every dollar you invested. In the corporate world, if you're looking at recovery rates, you're looking closer to 80. So 80 cents on the dollar if a company defaults. So with municipals, I think as an investor, again, wearing the investor hat, it's a better investment, and especially where you get the tax break. They're generally not managed as well. Some of them are managed with sinking funds. Some of them are managed with having the ability to call back some of the debt. Generally, when they issue municipal bonds, they generally issue a series over a period of years, and that's another way of managing, you know, a good way of managing the financing rather than having to wait. They're saying, okay, we'll have a one-year bond, a two-year bond, and so forth, and then you as the investor choose which one you want to be in. But that also helps because that you're going to have a natural drawdown, if you will, or you're going to have a drawdown of the amount of debt.
Well, I could see some bizarre thing. If the Bears dash, you could say to Jacksonville, hey, for $650 million you can buy the place, you know, and it'll be yours with naming rights and everything. And that might be a great deal for those guys, you know, to where you'll weasel out. In today's world, I find it really hard that the city could just write the check without some court challenge, because the city doesn't have it.
Well, the federal government has done it too, right?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, but times they could be a changing. I mean, right now, the governor said, we're not doing it. And look what happened in Kansas City. They just voted the whole thing down.
Right, yeah, no, it's, you know, I'm not as familiar with what's specifically going on there, but I think in terms of, like I said, you know, depending on which hat you're wearing in this, from an investor's point of view, I would not say that it would be a poor investment just because you have a very high probability of getting repaid. There is going to be a source. They always find some, they always find a source, or like you said, they always find a, you know, another team or another city that's going to end up coming in and buying it, or another entity that would come in and buy the space. So there's, you know, repurposing space. Unlike what's going on in the commercial real estate business with,
boy, that's crazy, huh?
Office buildings.
Yeah.
Right?
What do you make of that? I mean, the stuff coming downtown. Jan Flanagan talked about on was it on Monday? There's a place here. He and Nancy. There was, the thing had a, what was this? What was it, Greg? It was how many? $22 million The mortgage was 3 years ago, and it just went for one or two at auction. Something bizarre was it was 20% of the mortgage. It was the first bid.
Yeah, it's a trend, and it's a trend predominantly in larger cities, and you know, the repurposing, if you will, or somebody coming in. I mean, some of that is happening where certain, you know, I know in Boston, for example, some of the buildings that had been predominantly office buildings are being filled with, you know, I know law firms that are moving into some buildings, and so there are, you know, in some cases it's working, but in the majority of cases there's been issues. And again, when you're looking at investing in real estate, like a real estate investment trust, you have to look at what's behind it.
Yeah.
Office has not done well. Other areas have done quite well. Multifamily housing's done extremely well. So it's kind of hard to label the whole industry, but yeah, office buildings are under pressure right now.
I know we ran over another stuff, which we always do, but you know, I have no issue with that because it's always good stuff from you. What, real quick, and maybe we'll have to run this next week. What do you make of this Russian thing? You and I have been talking about the China situation. When I say the situation, the amount of investment there that people have from here, I mean, some of it is real estate investment that I can't imagine getting paid on, but we don't seem to be able to get a number on that. Even you can, and you're my source. I mean, there's got to be people here that aren't getting paid, but somehow we don't hear about it. There's also massive investments from here there in terms of manufacturing, even in banking and in Hong Kong and things like that. Well, for those that don't, there's an article here by Hugh Sun, S-O-N. Evidently, J.P. Morgan Chase has a whole bunch of investments in Russia over the years. They have smaller banks and things. And now, because of political policy, I'm not saying it's wrong or not, we have sequestered a whole bunch of funds hear that the Russians had on deposit, correct? We sequestered that stuff. And so now the Russians are saying, okay, you've got $440 billion worth of Russian assets, oligarch assets, whatever you want to call it. So now Russia says, what we're going to do is we're going to take this VTB bank that J.P. Morgan Chase evidently is a big owner of. By the way, it sort of matches up with the 440. It's now ours and you're out. I don't know how far this is going to go, damn it. It's like, I can't imagine if this starts to happen in Russia, if it ever happened in China, oh my God. I mean, how many people here got money there?
Yeah, it could be a big issue. And one of the points I'd written down just to mention is the first thing, you know, statistic that came out, global debt is at an all-time high. So it's not just here in the States, it's globally. Geopolitical risk is very high. It's been high, you know, in other periods of time as well. But I would not touch those investments, even if it came through, if hedge funds or a group had a way of making this all work. I would stay away with the 10-foot pole. You just don't want to get involved in that. The issue, I don't know that it's going to grow because even though there are investments here, Russian investments, I wouldn't be as concerned as you're saying. I would be a lot more concerned about China.
Yeah.
But look at what's happened with TikTok, right?
Yeah.
So there is going to be, we're going to continue to see more of this as time goes on. And I would say to investors, be very careful about stepping in and investing in Russian or Chinese or for that matter, other than some of the industrialized nations, say the European nations and possibly Japan, I would really stay out of the international space as an investor. I do think we're going to see more problems. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg with Russia. I do think we're going to see more of this with China as well. That's why we're staying as far away as we possibly can right now.
All right, Dan, thank you. Good stuff. Take 30 seconds. If somebody dropped a small college endowment on us and it was all cash, what would we do with it? What percentage would we be?
I think we would still continue to put money into T-bills as a good, I'd say a good chunk of it, because we're buying, the other day, we're buying one-month T-bills at 570, three-month at 550. That's only going to continue. This talk of rates even going higher, which is great for T-bills. We put some money into corporate bonds, some good short-term corporate bonds, including, one that we had mentioned before, Service Properties Trust. I would definitely put some in your protected strategy. I think it's perfect timing for that. Preservation of capital is really important. You have to have enough income when you're managing money for any type of foundation or endowment. And so, looking at getting as much yield as possible in the portfolio through bonds and through, both corporates and even at this point in treasuries, because you're getting...
How much would you be comfortable with just being, even if we protected it a little bit, kind of long, maybe no calls against it, 20% maybe?
I think 20% would be good. I think if we were to put some money in the equity market, it would be more in the dividend stocks or the value stocks or I think I'd stay, we'd have a small percentage in growth, but I think we'd have a larger percentage in dividend paying stocks. And there are a couple of good ideas there as well right now that I think would be, you have to look for income.
Getting all these people before it crashes, or are they going to want us after?
Good question.
In 2008, I had a guy, we're running over here a second, a guy who listened on the show and so forth, and he had a portfolio, Dan, he had probably, he was with Schwab, I think, and he had, he must have had 25 positions that were all live, short put, short stuff, that were all expiring. And when I had two, three really good clerks working for me, when I was trading in the OEX, we had probably 50 positions around the rest of the floor and in the agricultures and stuff, but maybe only 8 or 10 of them were live in any given expiration day, because, you're bid below the market, you're offering. It's a big deal.
Right.
This guy had almost the same size position as we did. And it was all by himself, without anybody at Schwab saying, what are you doing here? He comes in and he says, I need some help. And I said, I forget the guy's name. He goes, I'm looking at it. It was the worst day in 2008. And I go, you started the day with $250,000. I think you're out. The guy goes, what do you mean? I said, all these puts, your short put. You know, this is back when everybody was short in puts. You know, it was, and I said, I can't help you. I would have loved to have that guy as an account 2 months before.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah,
I said, I can't help you. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, I don't. I need my two best guys I have to put just on your account, and I'm not so sure we can save it.
It was a very tough period to put money in bonds, right? Because there was no yield.
No, yeah.
And anyway, it was all the concern in the equity market because we knew there was going to be continued downside. There was that, you know, so it was a very tough time.
Well, yeah, and
we're in a different environment now, of course.
Yep, we are. And I just hope that we get, you know, people who recognize it before it happens. I honestly do. I don't know if we will or not. Obviously, we're getting new clients, but you know what I'm talking about, Dan. We're not getting the whole mentality that this could be different. We better do something different, and we really should be, I think. Anyway, SP Futures now down 63.286. Are you going to run and buy some Meta right after the show?
No.
in a word, no. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
All right, bye.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.